We've got Kurt Wagner from Recode here to talk about Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and everything in between. Social media in 2016, it was a wild ride, and we are here to talk about it all coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1672, recorded Friday, December 16th, 2016, for Thursday, December 29th, 2016.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about everything you need to know about technology. And for our holiday week, we are recording episodes of the biggest tech topics of the year. Mm-hmm. Today, it's social media.
Today is no different, except that it's very different because we haven't talked about social media yet.
No, we haven't. I'm Megan Maroney.
Sorry, I didn't mean to confuse you. I'm Jason Howell. We're super excited to be here, super stoked to welcome on someone we've had on a million times this year, and it's been our pleasure every single time, Kurt Wagner from Recode, to talk about social. How's it going, Kurt?
Hello again to you both. Happy holidays.
Thank you for carving out a nice chunk of time to talk about kind of the biggest social news of the year, because this... I feel like, in summary of 2016, lots of things have happened, but social media, in a strange way, has been critical to so many things that are happening just on the world stage. It's really been a driver of everything.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to think my beat is easily the most important beat that we have here at Recode.
Of course.
And thus, my job, what can I say after that? But, yes, thank you for having me. It's been a crazy year. I mean, we were actually... I saw that you guys sent me a little list of topics that we might cover, and I was like, first of all, a lot of those, you don't forget they happen, but you just are like, wow, that was 2016. That feels like that was 5 years ago that some of this stuff happened. So it has been a very busy year.
Yeah, it's almost overwhelming when you look at the list.
Right. Well, let's start with arguably the biggest newest social network, Snapchat. It's not new, of course, but this was the year that the world figured out about it. And by the world, I mean people born before 1980. The company changed its name to Snap, made some smart spectacles, and got into some trouble with several of their filters. But that did nothing to slow down the popularity of all the puking rainbows. Let's start with the bad news first. The controversy over Snapchat's filter. There was a blackface filter in honor of Bob Marley, another filter that played up Asian stereotypes, and several filters that were probably plagiarized from visual artists and makeup artists. Did I miss anything, Kurt?
No, I think those are the two. That was way back in April with the Bob Marley one. I mean, I think the issue at the time, if I recall, was that Snapchat was pretty slow to do what seemed to be the most obvious and simple thing, which was to simply apologize, right? And say, hey, this came across, we didn't do an appropriate job of obviously thinking this through. This came across different than we expected, and we're sorry that it happened. Instead, as Snapchat has done, you know, I think the initial response was like, what's up? You know what I mean? Like, what's the problem? And I think at the time I remember talking with folks around the company, and just that has kind of been an issue at Snapchat. It's one of the only, things that maybe isn't necessarily going right for them at the moment is sometimes the leadership over there can just kind of, they feel very strong about certain things, and they refuse to bend and break, right? And so this is one of those instances where that's not a good quality, I would think.
I almost feel like it's kind of a core quality of technology in Silicon Valley right now. And this is an example of that. And you see it with a lot of the other really big up-and-coming companies, particularly with companies like Uber. It's this kind of tech hubris of just figuring like, well, you know, many of the original, you know, rules that exist for others, they don't exist for us because we're doing something cutting edge and compelling in a different way that you've never seen before. So, you know, we're just going to break things and whatever happens, happens. You know, it all, it's all expendable because it works for us. And that's the most important thing.
Right. Like, why apologize for pushing the envelope, right? And obviously, when you're doing it from a technological standpoint, that's one thing. When you're doing it in the way that in this case, you know, was racial you know, ethnic driven. It's like, okay, that's different, right? I mean, that is alienating your user base. That's not, you know, pushing back against the government. That's not pushing back against regulation. That's just simply offending people who use your product. So I think there's a big difference and probably some maturity that will continue to happen at a lot of these companies. You're right. You brought up Uber. I mean, Snapchat is not the only one to like make a mistake and then kind of steadfastly stand there and fail to apologize for it. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that will continue to evolve. But yes, that was definitely probably the negative side of Snapchat for this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they first did the Bob Marley one and they said, well, you know, Bob Marley's estate approved this, you know, we paid them. And so you think, you know, at that point I thought, well, maybe we're all being too sensitive. Like, you know, it's a lot of, there, you know, maybe we have bigger things to worry about. But then it followed the plagiarized filters.
Right.
And not once, but twice. First it was an artist, then it was a makeup artist, and then it was the Asian stereotype too. So it's like they didn't learn, but maybe fifth time is a charm. Maybe they've learned by now. But let's talk about the big change. They changed their name to Snap. That was in September, and that was because they were selling spectacles. Do you think there's another big reason? Does it have to do with the IPO?
No, I think two things. One, it's similar to how, on a very much smaller scale, of course, but it's similar to when Google turned into Alphabet a year and a half ago, right? They simply said, hey, we have all kinds of products. We're not just Google. By having the same name as our flagship product, maybe people forget that we also are, you know, providing a wireless internet. We're have YouTube. We have an entire like drone system with giant inflatable balloons, right? So I think that is probably what Snapchat was going after here, is saying, hey, we're not just this singular Snapchat app anymore. We now have spectacles, and theoretically in the future they'll have other things too. So let's go ahead and set ourselves up for that. Let's rename the company. I believe it'll probably match their ticker symbol when they're a public company. And so, you know, just as like kind of gives them maybe a little bit more freedom to build brands underneath the Snap umbrella, without people only associating them with their core app, even though that's, you know, the biggest part of the company.
Yeah. I feel like through this year, what we've seen a lot of, and we're going to talk about this in kind of the future topics throughout the course of this episode, is convergence of feature sets across all social networks. And it seems to me like what Snapchat did here, which is kind of forward thinking in comparison with a lot of what the others are doing, is they've created, by and large, they created a service that was in many ways doing things different than other services. And this is another extension of that, right? Like kind of moving beyond just converging with the same feature set of everyone else so that they're offering everything, and instead moving into hardware, which whoever saw that coming? But I mean, do you think we're going to see a doubling down and more hardware products maybe outside? I mean, is it all going to be camera focused? What do you think about that?
I do think we will. They have a team there, and I believe it's called Snap Labs. And it's led by a hardware guy, an engineering guy who used to work at Motorola. And my understanding is they're tinkering with all kinds of stuff. Obviously, the spectacles, the glasses being the most well-known and the only one that we've seen publicly. But I think that they could be doing stuff with drones. I think that they could be doing other types of wearables. I mean, what will they ultimately come out with? I have no idea. But I don't think that they are limiting themselves to, you know, your camera, these camera glasses. And I think the idea is like, how can you bring the service of photo and video sharing closer to the user, right? So this phone that I have here is pretty close. I carry it everywhere. But if I'm literally wearing sunglasses, that might even be one step closer to never, you know, taking them off, right? To like never being without my Snapchat camera. So the way I'm kind of thinking about it is, how can they continue to implement the camera into your everyday life? And I think that they're not the only ones doing that. I think we're seeing that from Facebook and Instagram as well. And but I think that probably means more hardware will eventually come out of the company. I just don't know how soon.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about the spectacles themselves. They launched right after the election, which was sort of a weird disconnect between this sort of the nation being divided and right. being confused and shocked. And then here come these spectacles, these glasses that you can put on.
Here come the spectacles to record the nation being shocked and confused.
Burning to the ground. Yeah.
Right. And some people felt that the most important thing they had to do in their life was wait in line for hours and hours. In some location, you know, that they didn't know until 24 hours. And it was this scarcity. And, you know, you'd look at these lines and see people that looked pretty similar. And so, you know, I mean, what do you make of the spectacles themselves and the marketing plan and just what that says about us as a nation?
Sure. I mean, I think the marketing plan, and I wrote about this for Recode, I think the marketing is pretty genius. For about 5 days after they announced they were going to be selling them out of vending machines, I was totally confused. And I was like, well, this is silly. They're never going to make any money. How are they possibly going to, like, you know, spread these things around? What I didn't realize was that, and sounds obvious perhaps now, but I don't believe the point of spectacles is to drive real revenue at this point, right? It's a total marketing stunt. Selling them out in vending machines is weird. Making people line up all the way around the block is weird. Only putting them in one place at a time for the most part and making those places like the Grand Canyon or the middle of Oklahoma is weird and different. So everything they've done is like counter to what you would have expected. And as a result, we're fascinated by how this whole thing is unfolding. And they are getting so much free publicity out of this because folks like myself are writing about it. I remember for the first week or even two after they started selling them, every new location would require a handful of stories in the tech press. Like Snapchat drops its next vending machine in Big Sur, right? And so they're getting all this free publicity. People are waiting in line. They're tweeting photos. They're Instagramming videos. I thought it was pretty genius. I don't know what that says about people willing to wait in line for 12 hours to get a pair of these glasses. Other than, you know, we've seen this before, right? The iPhone was pretty cool. I'm not trying to say that spectacles are the next iPhone, but people love to be on the ones to have the new gadgets. This is the new gadget at the moment. And so, voila, they're willing to wait. Who would have guessed?
Yeah, exactly. I remember when we first started seeing pictures, like, well, you know, earlier in the year, little hints that this was even happening. And I just thought it was a joke. Apparently yeah. It's not.
No, it's a real thing.
Not a joke at all.
I don't know if you two have used them. I actually have not used them. They didn't send out review copies to the press, which is a very Snapchat thing to do, by the way. Yeah. Most big tech companies can't wait to get their product in the hands of press so that they can, you know, write all about it. Snapchat hasn't done that. They haven't brought vending machines to San Francisco yet, which is not surprising to me, but that's where I live. So I haven't been able to even like wait in line to buy them. And I don't know. It's just going to be really fascinating to see how long they can maintain this kind of like cool, unique momentum around the spectacles, or if it ultimately gets, you know, saturated, or because more people can't get their hands on them, does the interest fade, right? Like we've seen this with, what's a great example? Do you guys remember Elo from like 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. It was like a Facebook killer. It was like a social network.
Oh, yeah.
But it was invite only, right? So like there was a time when like 100,000 people were waiting to get access to Elo, and they were like, oh, sorry, we're only going to let in a certain amount a day. And then a week later, 90,000 of those 100,000 people were like, well, I made it the last week without Elo and my life is still cool. I guess I'll move on. I wonder if something like that could happen with spectacles, where because they are so hard to get your hands on, do people who initially wanted them ultimately just say, well, actually, now that I've sat on it for 2 weeks, I probably don't need them. I'm going to move on. I don't know. I'm speculating here, but that's one thought, I guess, yeah, about 2017, how this is going to go.
Absolutely. So moving on, it's impossible to summarize a single year in a matter of a few short minutes when it comes to the world's largest social network, Facebook. It's user growth off the charts bonkers. It's involving itself in nearly every aspect of the modern internet that it can. So I mean, I don't even know where you begin here. Let's start easy. because there are challenging topics. Let's start easy with Facebook Live and live video, which saw the company get into live video whole hog, making it instantly more difficult to dedicated services like Periscope and rest in peace, Meerkat. In hindsight, is this merely a fad or is Facebook in better shape because of its integration of this, Kurt?
I don't know if Facebook is in better shape or worse shape. I think maybe the positive of this whole thing, if you'll recall, they're actually paying media companies, including the one I work for, Vox Media. They're paying folks to use their product, right? So I think maybe a positive of this is, at the very least, everybody in the world of media has probably used Facebook Live at some point over the last year. They've seen how it works. Perhaps if they've done it enough, they've gotten some benefits out of it or understand what the benefits might be. I think the downside of all this is I'm still not totally convinced that live video on a Facebook or Twitter is even great, is even a good thing to do. I mean, most of the live videos I see, I don't actually watch live. I watch them later on. And then I wonder, well, why not just take a little bit more time and put together a nice polished edited video? Rarely does live actually come into to play for me unless there's like a guy scaling Trump Tower with suction cups, which of course everyone had to drop what they were doing to go watch that.
Yeah.
But besides that, you know, most of the videos that are live, I think, don't need to be live. And so it'll just be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if it finds its own little niche, its own little corner of the internet, or if it blows up the way Facebook wants it to. I'm not yet sold that it will.
Well, it's interesting that you say that this was easy. You know, there's so many complicated issues with Facebook this year, and Facebook Live was one of them, too. I mean, we think about the acts of violence that were live streamed this year and true. Made things, you know, that was very complicated. It spread quickly. It was a lot of questioning, like, do we watch this? Is this, you know, are these things happening all the time? And now Facebook is giving us the opportunity to see them when, you know, in our tiny bubbles, we don't normally. So, I mean, what do you make of like the political issues that came with Facebook this year?
Well, the violent stuff, I believe it happened earlier in the year. And I think a lot of people have probably forgot that happened.
It was July, I think, when
was it over summer?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's crazy given how much has happened outside of the world of Facebook in the last 6 months that you forget, right? That was a big deal, that this whole notion of like, well, how do you monitor live video? Like, there's a reason that on TV, you typically see live video with a short, even if it's 3 or 5 second delay, because someone wants to be there to pull the plug, right? And if you have 10,000 people all going live at once, there's no way you're going to be able to stop someone from doing something spur of the moment that's violent or racist or aggressive or whatever. Obviously, Facebook, my understanding is Facebook and Twitter are working on, you know, AI algorithms and things to try and detect this type of behavior so that it can be pulled down automatically. But I don't know. Unfortunately, I kind of believe that it's going to take another incident before people, you know, really push for this to be to be fixed, because there are so many other things that Facebook is dealing with right now. I don't think it's top of mind. I shouldn't say I don't know where it ranks in terms of their priorities internally. I do not know. But at least from the outside, it no longer feels top of mind given everything else that's been going on. And so I hope this isn't true, but part of me thinks like, we will be talking about this again because there will be an incident, you know, and then that is what's going to push this to the forefront and they're going to have to figure it out. But it's definitely a big deal. I don't think there's an easy solution right now. And I wish I had a better answer as to like how this is going to all play out.
Yeah, I mean, it was July that Philando Castile was shot by a police officer. His girlfriend live streamed it, and then it went down. It went down that night, and representatives from Facebook said that was a technical issue.
Right.
And you know, back then I believed it, but given everything that's happened since then, I just wonder, it's, you know, you look back and you think, like, are they being upfront about what, you know, what's the technical issue, what's an algorithm, and what's someone saying, like, hey, we need to take that down.
Right,
and
I'm not saying,
yeah, that they're purposely doing it. It's a huge company. So, you know, what, you know, someone might be saying something that is not true, but they didn't know that it wasn't true. So, yeah, but it was maybe the beginning of this, like, what, you know, what power does Facebook have over this? Even though they say they don't have the power and they don't want to have the power, like from a journalistic perspective.
I don't have any hard evidence. My gut check is that it was not a technical issue. My gut check is that they were trying to figure out how to move forward, and they threw a digital black box over the video until they made a decision and ultimately decided, okay, this can stay up. I feel like we've seen them do that in the past with other things like photos, right? Like a photo will disappear for 24 hours and they'll be like, oh, it just technical issue. It went away, but now it's back. And we've also decided that it can stay up. You know what I mean? So, I think this all comes back to a much, much bigger problem that I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot more when it comes to Facebook and their fake news thing, which is just like, what is Facebook's role, right? It wants to be an independent platform. And obviously it has guidelines, things that are and aren't allowed, but there's a very big gray area in all of this that typically news organizations, they have editorial folks in place to make those, right? Like, is the news value of this video worth the violent aspects of it, or the, the troubling, gory aspects of it? Those are editorial decisions, and Facebook doesn't want to make editorial decisions. They want to leave everything up to a computer algorithm and wipe their hands clean and say, the algorithm will drive this. We don't have humans doing it. But unfortunately, it's not that easy when you're dealing with things of news value. So that's what we saw with fake news, and what we'll continue to see them battle probably in 2017 is like, is Facebook a media company? I believe that they are. They claim that they're not. And then when you are a media company, what responsibilities come with that? Deciding what should and should not be allowed on your platform is part of that. And so I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of rambling here, but I just think this is going to be the biggest theme probably from Facebook next year is how do they deal with the fact that they're making decisions about what we see and what we don't see, and when will they take responsibility for it?
Yeah, that's absolutely. And that kind of leads into the next topic, which, you know, you've kind of mentioned some of these things. We've seen overly aggressive bots that are removing, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning photojournalism, right. Endlessly discussed and insanely politicized proliferation of fake news. I mean, that just keeps coming up. Facebook's been on a constant defensive with all this stuff. Now, Facebook announced very recently that it's challenging fake news on the platform with partnerships that will call out those links within the news feed. Necessary change, Kurt? What do you think? Is it a good start? Can it be effective enough? What do you think?
I think it's a good start. I've already seen people complaining and saying, well, how can you trust ABC or the Associated Press to accurately, you know, be the arbiters of truth here? I, as someone who's in the media, I think that the Associated Press does a good job. You know what I mean? I think that they're, for the most part, pretty neutral, and they have good reporters, and that they are a good example of someone who could read a news article, take their skills as journalists to go out and fact check it, and then come back and say, hey, we think that there are issues here or there are not. So I think it's a good, I don't know how efficient it's going to be, right? Like, there are, I would imagine, millions of stories shared on Facebook, or millions of posts every day, thousands of stories. I am sure that there will be people on both sides of the political spectrum that come in and flag things as fake just because they don't like them or agree with them. And is a six-person team at ABC going to be able to fact check the entire internet every single day? No, they're not. So I don't know how this ultimately plays out, but I like the idea of saying, hey, we're actually going to look at these stories that people have flagged and do our best to determine their news accuracy. I just don't know how long-term this fix is going to be. I'm sure we'll find out how quickly they're inundated with things as they start to roll this out.
Yeah, and hope that they're able to meet the demand of that accurately and not find themselves in another predicament as a result. Now, right. there were times throughout the year, particularly towards the last, within the last half of the year, where Facebook's leaders just really kind of, I don't know, my own personal opinion, seemed tone deaf to the impact of the network, of the platform that it has, the influence that it has over, right. over its users. How imperative is it for the success of Facebook for this attitude to change, or does it really matter? Mike Elgin, who's been, who was previous host of this show, and it always stuck with me, had always said Facebook has a monopoly on people. So I mean, that's an insane, like, that's an insane way to put it, but it's true. Everybody is on Facebook. How important is it for Facebook's kind of higher ups, including Mark Zuckerberg, to kind of, I don't know, change their attitude when it comes to this stuff?
Well, I think right now it's important to folks like us because we're in the media world and we care. How important is it to users? I don't know. I mean, it's not as if Facebook is losing users. It's not as if their revenue is starting to disappear because people are pulling the plug and saying, we don't trust Facebook. So it matters to me. It sounds like it matters to you guys. I think it should matter to Mark. And I think it does. I think it really does. I don't think he likes this idea that, like, people in the media are calling, you know, Facebook out for this. But at the same time, what are the consequences of not moving super quickly? Right now, there haven't really been any. Mm-hmm. But here's the irony, right? It's like you can't sit there on an earnings call every quarter and say, the reason Facebook's so incredible is that you can get a Super Bowl-sized audience for your content every single day, right? We have a Super Bowl-sized audience on Facebook every day. How incredible is that? Look at how many people we reach and impact. And then come out and say, oh, well, when it comes to fake stuff on Facebook, like it's not our fault. It's not that big of a deal. We don't have much influence. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you can't have both. And I think that people know that, but it's just a matter of how does Facebook, I guess, change their tune? It seems like they already are because when the election first happened, Zuckerberg said, this idea that fake news impacted the election is crazy talk. You guys are, you know, ridiculous. Get out of here. 2 weeks later, he's like, here's our 10-point plan to fight fake news, right? So, like, clearly things change quickly over there. But how much are they going to be willing to openly accept responsibility for? I do not know.
So they've been building up a lot of the features of Messenger. You know, now you can use the Snapchat chat-like filters in Messenger. I mean, do you think that Facebook is looking at the success of Snapchat and how it really is just more, there are stories in Snapchat, but it's really more of a one-on-one interaction. And do you think Facebook looks at that and says, like, hey, it seems like it's a lot easier to build up Messenger and, you know, if in a Messenger platform, no one's claiming that anyone is a journalist or, you know, is a newspaper or is the arbiter of truth or not. Do you think they're really sort of trying to push people to spend more time there as people share less personal things on their Facebook newsfeed?
Do you wonder if they want to drive news readers to Messenger or just general time spent to Messenger? Because I think those are probably two different strategies, right?
I guess, well, I mean, their bottom line is like who's spending more time looking at ads, right? Like that's what it's essentially all about. So do you think that they're driving more people to Messenger just to keep the stickiness there instead of reading news?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Messenger has over 1 billion users. They've clearly put a lot of time and resources into building up that platform. When they split it out, I guess it was like probably 2 years ago now, that was a huge deal, right? They were saying, hey, you have to go download this new app if you want to keep messaging your Facebook friends. We're not going to have it in the core app anymore, that feature. And people freaked out, and yet everyone went and did it. So clearly there's a demand for it. And I think that what they see for messaging, it depends on who you ask, right? There are a group of people who really truly believe that messaging is the future of all communication. And it's kind of almost silly to say it out loud because most of my communication now actually already happens through Messenger, right? But what I mean by that is they think you're going to get your news in Messenger. They think you're going to shop in Messenger. And not just Facebook Messenger, but you know, WeChat is doing this, right? And Kick is doing this. And the messaging app is viewed by a lot of people as the most important service you have on your phone. So let's bring all these other things that you do and bring them into that experience so you don't ever have to leave. I think that's what Facebook is ultimately doing with Messenger. I think the Snapchat thing, the idea of, you know, building Snapchat features into Messenger to try and get people to spend more time there, it's totally legit. I think we've seen Facebook attempt to replicate Snapchat's app probably 2 or 3 times now without success. And so what they seem to have resorted to here is saying, well, we're never going to replicate all of Snapchat. So let's go ahead and take the best features and the coolest features of Snapchat and just put them in all the apps that everyone already used from Facebook. It sounds, again, obvious, but there was a time where they literally tried to replicate the entire experience instead of just saying, we're going to take stories and put it in an Instagram. We're going to take filters and we're going to put it into Facebook Live and now Messenger. And we're going to take, you know, Discover, and we already have that with instant articles and things on Facebook. Like, they are just ripping Snapchat apart and putting it into all of their different services. And it'll be really fascinating when Snapchat goes public. They're going to have to start sharing user numbers quarter after quarter, things like that. It'll be interesting to see if this has a real impact on them. I think that it could, because they're not, you know, Snapchat is still a young and growing company. And here Facebook is really trying to dismantle them.
And then there was Instagram, which underwent some major changes this year after a mass outcry in March over Instagram's announcements that they would be changing the algorithm on your feed. The company spent the rest of the year copying Snapchat and Facebook's other features. Let's start with the algorithm. Now, you had to remind me, Kurt, because I had completely forgotten. And I look at Instagram every day, but I just, you know, I've gotten used to the algorithm. Why do you think so many people were against the change? And do you think anyone cares about it at this point?
Yeah. First of all, that Mark Wahlberg GIF was one of my favorites, so I was glad I was able to somehow get that into the story. So I think people freak out anytime you know these companies change a product that they use regularly and that they're comfortable with, right? I mean, we see it with Twitter all the time. We see it with Facebook. I mean, people freaked out when Facebook rolled out News Feed, right? Like, they thought that was just chaos, and now that is like the only way you use Facebook is News Feed. So I think people freaked out because it was different. I think what Instagram did here with the algorithm is primarily say, hey, we realize there's now a ton of stuff on Instagram. People are starting to follow more and more folks. That's not going to go down, right? Like, typically your follower, the number of people you follow rarely goes down. It's probably only ever going to get bigger and bigger. And so you're going to see more and more stuff. And if you're only going to spend the same amount of time in the app today that you're going to a year from now, but there's going to be more stuff, you're probably going to miss things. And so this is the same reason Twitter is tinkering with an algorithm, why Facebook has always had an algorithm, why Google has an algorithm, right? As they say, you have limited time. When you come and enjoy our product, we want to make sure you see the best stuff. So I think that's why they rolled it out. And I think, you know, I don't know if they would admit this, but I think there was part of it is like, we want to show you more things from your friends and family, because I think Instagram got a little brand heavy for a while. And this was probably a way to, you know, push down some brand posts and uplift some more like organic content from actual people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the Instagram influencers who were most upset about this, you know, because they had, you know, it wasn't just pictures of their dog or their baby that they were trying to get people to see. It was their income, I guess.
Right.
So, yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. I mean, just real quick sidebar, but like I wrote about that at the time because Facebook has done this in the past too, which is where you subtly decrease organic reach for, let's say, a brand versus a regular boring user like myself. In order to reach all of your followers, you all of a sudden have to take out a promoted post, right? You have to pay to reach all the people who have followed your account. As far as I know, Instagram has not done that yet. That was a big concern at the time the algorithm was rolled out. And I'm sure brands are still sitting there waiting for Instagram to kind of do that, to say, we've tinkered with the algorithm. If you're a brand or a business, you're going to see less organic reach. In order to reach everyone, you got to open your wallets.
Well, this year, Instagram also launched Stories, which was either an homage or a ripoff from Snapchat, depending on which team you were on. Why do you think they launched Stories, and do you think it's been a success for them?
I think it has been a success. I believe they say they have 100 million daily users on Stories, which, considering they rolled it out in August, is pretty impressive, even for a Facebook or Instagram. I think they rolled it out. I think the reason is actually relatively simple. There's two. The first and foremost is this is a popular feature within Snapchat, which is their biggest competitor. Let's go ahead and roll this out so that people don't feel like they need to leave Instagram to use this experience somewhere else. Easy, done. That's issue one. I think the second one is Instagram has really become a place where you post, and I'm going to steal some of their language, and I don't really want to to be the Instagram spokesperson on this, but I've heard them say it so many times, that is where you post your highlights, right? Like, if you go for a weekend to visit friends, you might post one or two photos from the entire weekend, the best ones where you look great and you're out doing something fun. But Instagram was like, well, people were doing stuff all weekend long, and we don't really, our feed is so trained to be like only beautiful, amazing photos that most people don't feel comfortable sharing like the casual walk down the street that they had with their friends. So let's give them a place to do that too. Maybe they'll share more. I think people are sharing more. So I think, you know, A, let's get away from the precious, the highlights only thing that we had going on, and B, let's just go ahead and compete directly with Snapchat. And I think this accomplishes both of those things.
Well, I've also heard, this isn't Instagram's language, but it's the boring stuff. Right?
Like, yeah, it's the non-highlights, right?
Yeah. But I mean, when you think about it, it's the stuff that only certain people in your life really care about. You know, I mean, there are people mm-hmm. whose stories that I really want to see, you know, my family, my, you know, I want right. to see what they're eating for lunch. So, you know, all the other people on Facebook or Instagram that I'm connected with, maybe there's some parts of the I only want to see the important stuff. It's not necessarily that I only want to see the pretty pictures of them, but just I only want to see the big highlights from a lot of people's lives. But there are people in my life that I would like to see whatever they want to share with me, and if that's the shoes that they're buying, then that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I mean, I've just anecdotally spoken with folks on staff who are like, I use Instagram way more now, right? Because I'm seeing cool, less polished stuff, not just from my family and friends, but even from celebrities too, right? Like, there's a reason People Magazine is still around and why it's still important, and why E has an entire, you know, network around like looking at celebrities go grocery shopping, because people care what famous people do when they're not on stage or on the screen or whatever. And I think stories is a cool way for Justin Bieber. I think he actually announced recently that he's going to bring back his Instagram. I think he was off Instagram for a while. So anyway, there's
well,
that.
You know what, because you're the social media reporter and you're doing your job.
Because it's my job.
Yeah, it's your job.
No, everything the Biebs is doing online. But no, I think, like, you know, if he's in his dressing room and he's getting ready and he's like, hey, check out my dressing room. Here's the thing. People like that stuff. And I don't think that Instagram a year and a half ago was a place where that would necessarily fit. I think stories gives it an opportunity to make sense there.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about 2016 as far as Instagram is concerned. I feel like for so long, Instagram was just the service that you went to take a picture, and it would be an artful picture with filters and frames and blah, blah, blah. And it was really, people were really taking time and care to make these pictures. Over time, you know, other services like Snapchat came along. And I mean, there was a little bit of, obviously there's a little bit of Snapchat envy on the side of Facebook and whether they match those features inside Facebook or inside Instagram. But it really feels like 2016 was all about revitalizing Instagram, because throughout the course of the year, I'm not sure that I expected people to be, you know, as these kind of Snapchat-like features were hitting the service, I'm not sure I expected people to be like, yeah, actually, it's better over on Instagram, so I'm going to start using that now. Because they were so, you know, so ingrained in the way it was done on a service like Snapchat. But hey, Instagram does it, and in many people's minds, they do it better. So it's like they've revitalized their brand.
Yeah, why not? I bet sharing is up. I don't know how. I'm not even going to guess a number, but if you include stories and photos and videos shared to that, I'm sure that they're seeing a major spike in sharing. How could they not, right? If they have 100 million people using stories, I'm sure that it's way up. So that was the hope, and it seems, at least for now, like it seems to be working.
And so what do you think about their new live stories? It's recently launched. It's, what do you make of that? I mean, so that's just being able to, it's like Facebook Live or Periscope,
right,
or any of those, just being able to launch a live story at any time. But the difference with Instagram is you can't replay it.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake. I think we already learned that with Periscope, right? When Periscope first started, I believe once you stopped your feed, it went away. And I get why they want to do it, because they say, well, Instagram is about connecting people, and therefore, if you're going to go live, people should be watching live with you. We're connecting you in real time with those other folks, and they can comment and do whatever. I don't actually know if there's anyone who is going live, with the exception of maybe Mark Zuckerberg, that I would like stop what I was doing during the day and go watch. And especially with all due respect to my wonderful friends who I follow on Instagram, I'm probably not going to stop what I'm doing to go watch them either. So I think what they'll probably see, this is just a hunch, is that a lot of people go live and no one tunes in, or like three people tune in, and they will ultimately change this and they'll say, well, you know, you can save videos now and at least for a certain amount of time afterwards. That would be my guess. Otherwise, it sounds and feels pretty similar to what we've already seen from other folks. You know, it's becoming a staple now in a lot of these social networks. I'm actually surprised Snapchat doesn't have something either. And maybe they don't, you know, Snapchat's weird. They kind of do their own thing. They don't really copy anybody. So maybe they never will. But I think the fact that it doesn't save afterwards is actually a mistake. So we'll see.
What if I told you, Kurt, that they're not aiming at you? They're aiming at people younger than you.
Wait a minute. Snapchat's not building its app specifically for me. Well, or Instagram, I'm sorry.
I mean, I think that Facebook is really worried about getting all the people that were born, you know, after 1985 and getting them somehow. And I think that this Instagram Live Stories is really for teenagers and 20-year-olds, and they're not, and it's not for promote. I mean, it's for promoting your personal brand, you know, for everyone, which is, it's a sad state. But I think that a lot of teenagers think of themselves as needing to promote their personal brand. But you know, it's just like they're all hanging out, and you know, they want to go live. A group of kids want to go live, or I feel like it's more like FaceTime, but on Instagram. And I think that generation really doesn't want to be able to, doesn't want other people to be able to watch things again and again. But I also think that's dangerous because that leads to a complacency of like, oh, I can do whatever and nobody can watch it again. But as we all know, I mean, I don't know how you screenshot an Instagram video, but I'm sure it's possible. If not now, it will be.
Point a camera at the screen while it's recording.
Exactly.
You got it.
Yeah. So it leads to this idea of like, I can do anything and no one's ever going to see it again. But that's not true.
Yeah, no, Megan, you're right. I can get on board with that argument. As much as it pains me to know that Instagram might not be building for me, you're probably right. I mean, the way, and we've seen this with a number of standalone kind of smaller apps that have gotten some funding this year in Silicon Valley, most of which I bet most people do not know because they're taking off with younger folks. Things like Marco Polo or House Party or Tribe. These are apps that are all about like video messaging and this notion of being in the same space at the same time. So you're right. Maybe this is Instagram saying we want to be on the same level as those folks who that people in high school and college are using. I just know that seeing Periscope and watching how they did it, seeing how much success Facebook has had with live after things are done being live, right? Like Chewbacca Mom. Let's take a look at that. I even wrote about this. I can't remember. 160 million views or something like that. I guarantee 159.9 million of those were after it was live, right? So it is not something that you would see. If this had happened on Instagram, we would never have had this video, right? Yep. And I think that they'll probably ultimately realize, okay, we're missing out on some good stuff. So maybe the solution is let's just make an option. You can save it if you want. You don't have to, right? Simple. If you do something really funny like this lady did, then go ahead and save it and make $1 million in endorsements or whatever she did.
Yep. All right, finally, there's Twitter, the service that media types, us included, can't get enough of, yet it confuses the living hell out of most people. That's reflected at least in part by the stagnation of user growth throughout the year. Twitter seems like a company that doesn't know how to be a company, while at the same time, it's used as a critical megaphone for delivery of news, opinion, and influence, and confusing position to be in, basically, for a company like Twitter. So Twitter's reportedly interested in a sale, but no one wanted to step forward. What are the biggest business challenges for the company keeping it from the success that it so desperately wants, Kurt?
Yeah, it's funny. You were like, I guess we'll reluctantly talk about this this Twitter thing because I feel somewhat by the end of 2016, I kind of feel the same way. Let's see, business challenges. I think the biggest one is that the company is still not profitable. It's not growing its user base, as you pointed out. And as a result, the idea of the company making significantly more revenue than it is right now is really hard to grasp, right? It's like what is going to change about Twitter that's going to make it a significantly bigger business a year, 3 years from now than it is now? And I don't actually have an answer, and I don't think they have an answer, which is probably the biggest deterrent for a potential buyer. Yeah. A really interesting tidbit here. Instagram has like 400 employees, between 400 and 500 employees, and they just announced yesterday that they have 600 million users. Okay, so 400 employees supporting 600 million users. Twitter has like 3,000 employees, or now a little less because they did layoffs, and they have 300 million users. My point being is that they have way too many people for the size of their audience. And I think what it does is it slows everything down. It makes it hard to launch new products. There's way too many cooks in the kitchen, that kind of thing. And I think that they have a lot of internal things they should probably figure out before someone's going to fork over $18 billion to bring them in.
I mean, we saw a lot of attempts throughout the course of the year. We saw the live video and deals with organizations like the NFL to do Thursday night football and all that kind of stuff. We saw Twitter getting rid of Vine, or kind of shedding itself from Vine, and in the hopes of kind of focusing its efforts. What's the most important priority, do you think, for Twitter at this point? Are those efforts going to help going into 2017? Or is this the kind of situation that really needs a change at the top to think about this completely differently? Because apparently everything that they're trying just really is not hitting.
A few weeks, or maybe it was even a month and a half ago, I'm trying to think when. Anyway, I published like a list of, here are five products I would love for Twitter to roll out. The issue is, I don't know if any of those are going to jumpstart or whatever jumpstart growth the way that Twitter needs. I like the idea of the NFL thing. I'm a sports fan, so perhaps I'm biased here. The problem is, it's not exclusive, right? So while, yes, it was great, I was able to watch the game on the bus as I was riding home. As soon as I got home and I got to a better TV, a bigger TV, I put Twitter away and I turned it on there. I don't envision that necessarily moving the needle the way that they thought it would, unless they're willing to fork over to get exclusive rights to things that people have to see. And I don't see that happening because, for example, the NFL games, I mean, the companies that have the streaming rights, NBC, CBS, those folks, they're paying hundreds of millions of dollars for that content. So there's nothing that Twitter is doing right now that makes me think, oh, this is going to be their saving grace in 2017. And I think that's concerning. I think that that is not necessarily a very welcome sign to anyone who came in and said, well, we're going to take a serious look at buying this company.
Right. And I mean, one of the big challenges right now, perfectly illustrating Twitter's kind of confusing position, is the fact that, as an example, President-elect Donald Trump uses the service to reach millions of people, unfiltered opinions, hints at policy and direction, all that stuff on his Twitter feed. His words on Twitter can literally tank a company. That's how much power this sort of delivery affords. Yet Trump didn't invite Twitter to the table at the tech summit at Trump Tower. How can Twitter be taken seriously in this, I don't know, this technologically, politically charged environment? And does it even want to be part of the discussion at this point?
Well, I think it has to want to be part of the discussion. I mean, even though I just kind of went on a little rant there about all the things that aren't working at Twitter, the company has 300 plus million users. The president-elect of the United States of America is using Twitter as his own personal like press release machine. Yeah. And so it's no secret that Twitter has an amazing cultural influence still. So as a result, I think they need to be part of these conversations because, especially given Trump's interest in Twitter, they need to make sure that, they are putting their voice out there for whatever issues are most important to the company. The problem is there were rumors of a couple different reasons Twitter wasn't invited to this big meeting you mentioned. We don't actually know which one is true.
Right.
But I think part of it really does. One of them was that Twitter is just too small of a company. And I legitimately think that that could be part of it, right? I mean, when you look at all the other folks who were in the room in terms of market cap and everything like that, like Twitter is smaller. And so could, because Donald Trump is such a business guy, could he be looking at Twitter as a business and saying, well, it's a failing business. Therefore, I'm not interested in dealing with them. I don't know. He's such a wild card that it's really hard to predict. And I feel like I don't have a good answer to you know, whether or not they'll be involved. I think they need to be. I just don't know how they get there.
And what do you think the role of just abuse on Twitter this year? I mean, we saw it. I don't think that it was bigger necessarily this year, that maybe more high profile.
Maybe more attention to it. Yeah.
And this was the first time they really began stepping in and taking away high profile accounts. And people were not happy about it. And I think, you know, when anyone is going to, they were the sort of the last one to do that. Like the last place that was just saying, you know, we're free speech. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to use any of our tools to stop people unless it's, you know, you're really physically threatening someone. But then they kind of backed away from that this year. What do you make of their decisions in that?
And yeah, I think they've certainly had enough outside pressure to kind of be forced into doing something. What's going to be really fascinating is like Donald Trump is kind of a bully on Twitter, right? And it's like, yeah, maybe he's not explicitly throwing around racial slurs like a lot of Twitter users do, unfortunately, but like he calls people out and he bullies them. He's calling out Boeing and the stock is tanking and billions of dollars of market cap are disappearing in a matter of minutes. So it's like, how do they need to be the ones responsible for, you know, even though they want to provide a free speech platform, they don't want to be known as like, oh, that's Twitter. That's the Donald Trump hate machine. You know what I mean? And I feel like that could be a real serious thing that happens in 2017 if there is not a more serious look at like, how is he using it? What is our role? What is our responsibility as a company to monitor, if anything, right? And we've already seen Twitter kind of get dragged through the mud for a lot of their user abuse issues. And I don't think that having the president-elect or eventually the president of the United States using it to bully people is going to be good for business. Like, it might attract people to look at Twitter because it's a train wreck. You can't look away. But I don't think it's the kind of thing that is going to encourage a lot of people to sign up and want to be part of the conversation, which is ultimately what they need.
Yeah, I mean, I think this year we really saw the power of the group, the mob, on Twitter, like really, because, you know, I mean, when Trump called out Megyn Kelly on Twitter, I mean, she got death threats. She got people showing up at her house. You know, I'm talking about the Fox News reporter. And that was all scary. But I mean, I've heard her talk about it. That kind of stuff has happened to her before. She is a person in the public world. She disagrees with a lot of people. Right. And that's her job. But then when he called out a young woman who stood up at one of, you know, at the town hall and said, you know, and said something, and she also got those death threats. And this was a private citizen. This was just a woman that was not in the public eye, but then still got, you know, these people showing up at her house. And so it's really just the power, and whether it's Donald Trump's power or some other leader of a mob on Twitter, whether they're trying to be a leader of a mob or not, that those people are there on Twitter. And I think it's a tool that can be used for that, and that needs to change, I think.
Yeah, and whose responsibility is that, right? Like, is Twitter the one who, is Jack Dorsey going to be the one who says, sorry, Donald Trump, we're not going to let you tweet anymore? Man, that is such a tough question, because you know who should be telling them that is his cabinet, is the people who, his Congress. Congress should be going to him and saying, hey, you're bullying U.S. citizens, or you are making dramatic changes to the national economy by tweeting at Boeing or tweeting at Lockheed Martin. Like, this is unacceptable behavior. Why is it Jack Dorsey's responsibility to do that? And yet we are at a point right now where no one else has seemed to have taken action. And so is it Jack's responsibility? And gosh, what a job that would be, to be the one to have to try and take away potentially the Twitter account of the president of the United States. I mean, woof, I don't want to be doing that. So, it's a really sticky situation. And I don't know what the answer is. I would hope again that this is something that people in the political realm step up and say, this behavior is unacceptable. Because let's pretend Jack takes away Trump's Twitter account. What's he going to do? He's going to go somewhere else. You know what I mean? Like Twitter, while it's the most well-known and easiest way to broadcast things, it's certainly not the only way. So I don't know what happens there, but I don't think having a president who's handling Twitter the way that he is great for the company, even if it gets them a lot of attention.
Sure.
The big trends this year were live video, stories, fake news, and social networks optimizing for mobile. Kurt, do you have any predictions on the trends for next year?
I think that this fake news thing will continue for Facebook and probably for Twitter. I think video of all kinds is going to be big. I think video communication will probably be a bigger deal. So where Snapchat has really made video messaging popular, I think we're going to see Instagrams and Twitters and Facebooks of the world get more into video communication. Other than that, I don't know. I think live video will probably continue to be big simply because everyone's invested too much in it for it not to be relevant next year. So I guess live video, video communication, and then this whole fake news drama is not going away. So if I had to maybe pick three at the moment, those would be the three off the top of my head.
And what about like another spectacles-like product? Do you think other people are going to start making things like that with cameras and glasses?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I just still think that is so far away from being something that everyone needs, right? Like, I don't see that as being on the same realm as a smartphone, right? I mean, it's just the use case is just so singular at the moment that I don't know if everyone's saying, hey, we need to rush to have camera glasses. But these companies have so much money. They're so desperate to, again, retain people's attention, retain people's content, that if glasses is one way to do that and it requires a team of a dozen people to spend 6 months to build something like this, I'm totally throwing these numbers out as someone who's never built glasses and has no idea how much time and resources it takes. But like, could Facebook do it? Absolutely. They also have this new project or a new team, I guess it's called Building 8, and it's at Facebook. It's a hardware team. They pledged something like $100 million towards that team. So Facebook is building something in hardware. Maybe it's glasses. Maybe it's augmented reality, more like Google Glass style things. We don't really know, but I guess it wouldn't be surprising. I don't necessarily, that's not something that I'm sitting on the edge of my seat thinking about. But again, maybe folks who have spectacles are.
What about saturation in social media? I feel like, and I feel like when I predict, like look forward over the last couple of years, I've just kind of like my ongoing prediction seems to be that we've hit our point with social media, that we've like that there is no new frontier that hasn't already been discovered. And that Facebook, as one example, has so many people tied into it that it's really difficult to release something new and interesting in the world of social media. Do you think we've hit a saturation point and that, I don't know, maybe a new trend comes out of nowhere and kind of bumps it out? Maybe people respond negatively to the idea that they're oversharing so much of their lives, and maybe that's not a good idea. And so we move into a different direction.
Well, I think what we're already seeing and what we'll probably see more of next year is a lot of those, and I don't even want to say tier two social networks, because they're so far below the Facebooks and Twitters and Snapchats of the world that they really should be tier four or something like that. But, you know, we have like Yik Yak and Whisper and Flipagram and all of the Secret already shut down. So like we had this kind of class of new wave social networks that were getting funding and getting some traction probably 2 years ago. And I think a lot of them are really hurting right now. And I think probably in 2017, we'll see a lot of them disappear. Not that those are top of mind for anybody at the moment. So I don't think people are necessarily going to miss a lot of them. But I think it just simply reinforces this idea that Facebook in particular is so far ahead of everyone, has so much money, so many employees that they can pretty much build anything that anyone else comes up with. I think that's why Snapchat, the fact that they've gotten to 150 million daily users is really impressive, because despite Facebook being there, trying to clone everything Snapchat's doing, they've still been able to grow. And the only way they've been able to do that is because they keep coming out with interesting, unique things. And it still takes, you know, a company like Facebook 6 months to a year to come back and copy them. So not everyone can do that. Snapchat's been able to. And I think we're going to see a lot of the other folks kind of peter out next year.
Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us down this social media memory lane for 2016.
It's too bad we can't go back in time and revisit it. Oh, wait a minute. It's all there in social media.
It's everything is there.
Everything is there.
Yeah. We didn't even get to talk about Peach, so that's bad.
Oh, you remember that? Oh, yeah. Wasn't that fun?
Yeah. Well,
Kurt is a reporter at Recode covering all of these topics and a little bit more, and he's at Kurt Wagner 8 on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays, and I'm sure we'll be in touch in 2017.
Absolutely.
Love getting you on the show. So thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Have a good day. Tomorrow, we have an assemblage of journalists covering artificial intelligence to talk about the year in machine learning and AI. Lots of stuff to discuss there because I feel like 2016 has been big on AI and it's only going to get bigger. So we'll chat about that tomorrow. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
And we would love for you to subscribe to the shows. And if you're home for the holidays, tell your friends and family to subscribe too. And in fact, don't even tell them. Just grab their phone, go into a podcast app. If they don't have a podcast app, download one and subscribe to our show. Subscribe to all the Twit shows. Go to twit.tv to find out how to subscribe. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thanks to Mario for helping out here in the studio today. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.